interview with Jimmy Bentley, former Comptroller General of Georgia, an unsuccessful candidate for Republican nomination for governor in 1970. Interview April 29th, 1974 in Atlanta.
I'd really like for you to summarize very quickly your own background in Georgia politics.
Well, my background is a rather lengthy one, family-wise and personal. My father was a member of the state legislature in Georgia for, I guess, 12 years. He was a close friend and associate of Gene Talmadge and came along with Herman Talmadge, and then I got acquainted with, more closely acquainted with Herman Talmadge when he was running for governor the first time, and I was in law school at the University of Georgia. But my appetite for politics developed as a kid, really, paging in the legislature. I participated either as a page or doorkeeper or in some official capacity around the General Assembly for about 26 consecutive sessions of the Georgia legislature. My family has been interested in government, in Georgia government and politics for several generations. My first ancestor in Georgia, Major Charles Abercrombie, wrote Georgia's first constitution in 1788. So we've been, down through the years, been quite active in Georgia politics, and primarily at the local level of one or two two congressmen and county commissioners and sheriffs, legislators and such. I was executive secretary to Herman Talmadge after I left law school at the University of Georgia. I came down to Atlanta at about the age of 22. I think I was 23 when I was appointed his executive secretary, and then participated in several businesses. The business helped put two or three business activities together, and put Talmadge's campaign for the United States Senate together, what little there was. Once Senator George withdrew, we had very little campaign work really to do, except just to roll up as big a majority as possible. But I coordinated that campaign, and then that was 56. I guess I had an accident then and was crippled for several years. In 62, I was elected Comptroller General of the state, defeated fellow Zach Cravey, who was one of the old patriarchs of the old Talmadge organization.
Was that your first race?
It was my first campaign, yes. And the first time that an incumbent, and one of the major incumbents in the state house, had been defeated in, I guess, 25 or 30 years. But we structured a pretty strong campaign of young people, and I was able to ally myself with some of the cut into the Cravey. My opponent was Zach Cravey, who's the controller, had been the controller for about 20 years. We were able to cut into his support rather substantially, draw from a lot of the older Talmadge organization, and part of my political legacy was the younger Talmadge organization, and a rather substantial cross-section of black votes in the state. We put together a rather effective campaign, wound up carrying 156 of the 159 counties. Lost the other two of the others, we lost by less than 20 votes. So it was a rather decisive sort of a campaign. I served, was re-elected, defeated the same fellow again 4 years from then, and served another 4-year term as Comptroller General. Comptroller in this state is also Insurance Commissioner, Finance Commissioner, Fire Commissioner, and serves on the various pension boards, Department of Public Safety, Board of Trustees, Depository Board. He's has a, I guess it's about the second strongest office in state government. I held the office for 8 years and then ran for governor in made a rather ridiculous political decision to join the Republican Party. and ran for governor as a Republican and was defeated rather decisively. And since that time, I've been out in the jungle of private life, building and developing real estate.
What was the year you switched parties?
Let's see, it must have been, it was the year of the Chicago Convention. That would have been 68. It was in about October of 1968. Several of us, there was a group of us in the state capitol at that time who had come generally out of the Talmadge organization into our own elected offices. Some of us had helped to maneuver the appointment and then election of others. There were five of us, the Commissioner of Agriculture, the State Treasurer, my job, the Comptroller General, and two members of the Georgia Public Service Commission. Five of us there in the state capitol who had had several confrontations with the governor, and who was Carl Sanders at that time, and then Lester Maddox. We had several confrontations with the governor over legislative appropriations, various fights, and generally concerning political strength and control of the state government, I guess you could say, without exaggerating. We'd had several confrontations, successful confrontations with the government, and came to be known in the cartoons as the Capitol Clique and the Wiregrass Mafia and sundry nicknames of that sort. Three of those, four of my associates, the other four of my associates, went to the Democratic National Convention in 1968, and there they were spat upon and ridiculed, cartooned, harpooned, and it was a real orgy in Chicago. They came home grossly indignant about the entire situation and threatening to join the Republican Party.
Did they walk out at the convention over that question of seating delegates involved the Georgia delegation?
I don't recall whether they walked out or not. I know that several of the Georgia delegates did, and I believe that all four of my associates walked out and came home maybe a couple of days early from the convention. I believe they left the Georgia delegation primarily in the control of young Ben Brown, a young black legislator, and maybe Julian Bond, and I don't know. Well, Bond wasn't a member of the delegation, though, I don't believe. Anyway, I didn't go to Chicago. I had not cared about going. I'd been to several of the national political conventions, and this one had looked in the, like it might turn into somewhat of a debacle, and I just wasn't interested in going. And remained at home, but I had given thought to the idea of structuring the realignment of personalities in the state. We had political primaries becoming a mandatory sort of a thing, requiring people to choose between Republican and Democrat and vote in either Democratic or Republican primary. They were holding them on the same day and creating left and right sort of attitude, philosophy, and much of the activities in the state government. I saw an opportunity, really, to pull together the middle of the road, the so-called silent majority, I guess it's come to be known in more recent years. I saw an opportunity, I thought, to pull together the middle of the road thinking people and people to the right of center in the state and build a real solid political structure. I talked to a lot of people about it, including Senator Talmadge. Jested about it and chatted about it over a period of 2 or 3 years. But when my friends came home from Chicago, they just came home hell-bent to leave the Democratic Party and announced that they would. And I just made the decision in a couple of weeks' time to go along with them. And we joined. We all switched to just almost an overnight circumstance. They were just threadbare with the party. They had all served long periods of time in state government, were eligible for retirement. They had no particular economic concern in the years of the head. The kids were all out of college for the most part. They had pretty good retirement coming in, and decided to make us go out of office, I suppose, or at least go out of the Democratic Party at that particular time, and attempt to give the Republicans some background and professional thrust here. The Republicans in that primary that summer, or two summers after that, in the summer of 70, the Republicans grew rather miffed with me because I announced, well, at the outset, I was visited by a substantial delegation of Republicans who were somewhat indignant because we had not announced or not consulted Republican leadership before we joined, before we resigned from the Democratic Party and announced that we'd be voting Republican in the next campaigns, which was somewhat of a twist. There was generally a rather complimentary outpouring of telegrams and telephone conversations, but some of the leadership was actually apprehensive that to hear some of these professionals at the state capitol had joined the Republican Party without consulting them. I remember the candidate Frank Miller, who was ultimately the Republican nominee for lieutenant governor, was grossly indignant. Said, "You didn't say a damn word to me before you joined the Republican Party." This should have been some indication to me that that sledding would be pretty rough. Then Bo Calloway, who was at that time the Republican National Committeeman, without my solicitation or invitation, advised me that he was ready to endorse my candidacy for, he decided he wouldn't run for governor himself, and he'd endorse my candidacy for the Republican nomination. He did, and it made the top banner headlines on a Sunday morning paper. And I caught hell from a majority of the Republican leadership from that point on, who resented Calloway's endorsement. They called it a takeover by him. They thought he should have been impartial as national committeeman. It must have been a thousand reasons that a thousand different key Republicans resented his endorsement of me.
Had you talked to Calloway before the party switch?
Twice, yes. He knew that we were, and he came by my office twice. One time to say that I've heard that there's some talk in this direction and would like to encourage it. We need professional leadership. We need some people already in office. This is the kind of thing that will make the Republican Party in the state of Georgia. And I really think that if the Republicans had nominated me, I'm sure I would have won the governorship. All my political surveys and analytical material showed us in good shape as compared to Jimmy Carter, who was ultimately the nominee of the Democratic Party. The Republicans' leadership, they put together about 8 or 10 of the former Republican state chairmen and some of the former Republican national committeemen, and just a pretty impressive hodgepodge of Republican, former Republican leadership, really, in the state, and endorsed my opponent, who had hardly been in the state capitol, more than a dozen times. He was a television announcer for WSB-TV, and a very smooth, glib tongue sort of a fellow, but a person of no economic nor political nor leadership substance whatsoever. But he did have an impressive tongue, and he had a rather impressive war record. He'd had a leg blown off in World War II. And the Republicans rallied around him and came to rather bitterly resent me and gave him the nomination rather substantially, and that was the end of it. He ran a very poor, very modest sort of a campaign. He didn't really have the dedicated support of the Republican Party. Once I was defeated, most of them considered that sufficient, and then retired to the wayside to watch the Democrats elect a governor again. I think we would have been elected had we gotten into the general election, though, and then we could have really turned the course of history in this state.
What was Calloway's role in the switch? Did he talk to all five of you?
I'm sure that he talked to the others. I know that he talked to two or three of them. I met with him. He came by and extended a hand, as I said, of welcome, good wishes.
And he was what, Republican National Committee?
Republican National Committee. He was quite interested in seeing the Republican Party grow. Very dedicated, very sincerely interested. Calloway had been an appointee of ours to the Board of Regents when I was over at the state capitol with Talmadge. He was hardly more than a kid out of West Point.
You were what when Talmadge was governor again?
I was executive secretary to Herman Talmadge when he was governor. Calloway had been, his father had been on the state board of regents and decided to step down. We made a deal with him that we'd appoint his son if he stepped down, and gave Bo the slot on the board of regents. He served there and was quite outspoken and active on common sense issues in state government, and then decided to run for Congress and decided to run as a Republican and began building a Republican organization in the state. He was elected to Congress and then chose to run for governor and ran a sort of a stainless steel type campaign, you know, cold and impersonal, and that's where Maddox forced him into the legislature, and General Assembly being overwhelmingly Democratic, and rather short-sighted, I think, chose Lester Maddox to be governor of the state.
Why do you think it was short-sighted?
Well, Calloway had the background, the capacity, the intellect, the experience, the decision-making know-how to make a good governor. Maddox hadn't had 30 seconds experience in government. He had no knowledge of power pockets, economics, political economics, no governmental economics. He didn't know what the hell might bounce up at on the end of the rope when he pulled a lever. He came into the office just totally naive and totally green, yet rather bullheaded. And so we spent the 4 years that he was governor, most of us in Georgia spent that period of time just watching him train himself to be governor, which is, I think, a rather gross waste of time. This state has a whale of a lot of economic momentum and enjoys, I think, a position of respect and leadership among the states across the nation. And consequently, Lester didn't drag us backwards, but he didn't increase, stimulate the momentum particularly while he was governor. No fault of, no particular willful negligence on his part, he just didn't know. He'd never been in the governor's office.
Well, several people have told us that the effect of Maddox being elected governor and under the circumstances under which he was elected was that the legislature itself took on much more, assumed a much greater role in state government in setting policy.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. The legislature, it was necessary for the legislature to assume a role. Somebody had to make decisions. Somebody had to appropriate money and Lester had very little staff that knew what the hell to do, with some major exceptions. He had a very excellent and impressive director of the State Department of Commerce, General Lewis Truman. Had a remarkably fine individual in the State Revenue Commissioner, which is a rather strategic key slot. He had, by and large, good appointments to the Board of Regents. He appointed a very fine gentleman, Jacques Partain, to the Penal Board, the Board of Pardons and Paroles, which is another very vital slot in state government. He made some excellent appointments, but by and large, his immediate staff just didn't know the system of government. Had no capacity for communicating with and getting along with the General Assembly. Yet there was the obligation to pass appropriations acts, to delegate authority to agencies, boards, and bureaus, and the legislature just assumed that authority. I was controller at the time and had numerous visits with the governor. I guess he visited my office just for personal chats and little social visits as much as I visited his. And we were good friends. We still are good friends, but I just think that Lester was, you know, if you're going to appoint a governor, Lester is about the last person you would have appointed in those days. And I guess about the last person I would appoint today if I were going to appoint a governor. Although I'm very fond of him. He's quite an entertaining sort of a person. I look at politics and government as really in the same context that I do as a religion. You must believe in your government. We must support it. It's all psychology. It's a matter of faith, this American system of government and Georgia's system of politics. It's a matter of faith and respect and belief. And without faith in it, it gets awfully screwed up. I think this Watergate situation is the frustration that has come from it and the paralysis that we're suffering in some areas of our society today is a strong indication of the need for strong confidence and a real heavy stimulated interest in government and what's going on. I feel very strongly about, a professional attitude towards government by responsible men, men of know-how, and men of means, men with the guts to make decisions, the ability and the guts to make decisions. Leadership is a tough business. It's a lonely business most of the time. You need people who are capable of strong leadership in government. It's the biggest factor in our lives. And I just think that this fellow was not that strong a person.
How significant was Calloway's influence in talking to him? I take it from what you said that you gained the impression that you all would be very welcome in the Republican Party.
Yes, Calloway gave every indication that we would be. And one of the young men, Oliver Bateman, who's a state senator, and I don't know, he may still be in the state senate, came down and encouraged me to join the Republican Party on two or three occasions. Immediately after joining and after getting Calloway's endorsement, Bateman announced that he was going to run for governor himself. The Republicans in this state have a sort of a kamikaze attitude. It's there's a caste system. They keep themselves restricted to small groups and small pockets. They're far more interested in internal Republican politics than external Republican politics. I didn't give a damn who the state chairman of the Republican Party was, nor the Republican National Committeeman. I wanted to see 100 Republicans in the state legislature and a half dozen members of the United States Congress from Georgia become Republicans. I wanted to see a governor and a lieutenant governor and some Republican state house offices. I wanted to build a real common sense, not necessarily not a Strom Thurmond or Mississippi type Republicanism. I wanted a real aggressive, successful kind of politics in the state capital, and I would have been that kind of governor. I would have been a pretty effective one. I had the know-how and experience to really make one. And I wanted to do it and just literally change our history here in political history.
Could you discuss?
The Republicans just couldn't see that. They never could grasp that vision. They had never had, and they still don't and won't for years, have real leaders in the state house offices. I told them they'd either take over the state government in 1970 or they'd lose it for 20 years, and I think it'll probably be 15 or 20 years before they really come to their senses and can work cohesively. They get scattered off in these little old hate pockets and, you know, they just rather scuttle the ship. It is a kamikaze kind of politics that they practice. They'd rather scuttle the whole organization than to see one of their own kind who they object to, have some, you know, temporary dislike for.
Did you talk to Senator Talmadge before you switched? I mean, you said you had talked to him at one time, but
I talked to him several times, usually early in the morning. He very wisely and very wisely advised me to take a long weekend and think it over and to know what I was doing. He said it was rather ridiculous to think about leaving a majority party and joining a minority party. And my thought was that we might ultimately build it into a majority party in this state. Of course, no one at that time could foresee the debacles that have come from Watergate, for instance. You saw at that time Richard Nixon appointing a real stable team of judges to the United States Supreme Court. Not right-wingers or John Birches or Ku Kluxes, but men such as he's appointed, real solid, stable men. He was stabilizing the Supreme Court. That's the most sensitive spot in the whole United States government. And stability is the greatest virtue in any government, and he was creating some stability there on the United States Supreme Court. He was bringing about peace in Vietnam. He was moving on all fronts aggressively and tremendously impressive, I thought. And it just appeared to me a real wave that could very well sweep the South. And with some leadership, it still could. But we surely lost a lot by not really realizing or understanding the vision there in 1970.
What do you think will be the effect of Watergate in Republican Party development in the South?
Well, it will inhibit development, I think, rather drastically down here. It's created so much frustration and loss of momentum and loss of time, just the time that we've spent fighting in Congress and fighting in the courts in New York and the orgies that you read every day in the newspaper headlines is a loss of very precious time. And I would think, you know, that for every day we lose in momentum right now, it'll take 10 days to pick it back up somewhere down the road. I think the biggest impact, looking at it at this juncture, your book won't be, we'll know when your book is published, but right now I would think that the veto-proof, absolute control, dominating impact of the United States Congress and Senate is probably one of the most impressive outfalls of the Watergate political outfall to the Watergate situation. It could be that this election this year in 1974 will give the Democrats such a control of the United States Congress that they'll control it for the next 40 years. It may take, it will unquestionably take 16 to 20 years for the Republicans to gain a majority again. And it may be twice that long. Because when one party gets almost unanimous control, just normal political attrition will take a hell of a lot of normal political attrition to give the other party a balance and certainly give the other party control. Of course, the Democrats can always have a Watergate. The way times change now, the way one dramatic, truculent event after another in our society, you don't know what the hell will happen next. So Democrats may have a debacle themselves, or they may get a real lemon in the White House and just all get thrown out.
When you announced the party switch, were you thinking at that time of running for governor as a Republican?
Yes. Yes. And had told Callaway and those half dozen people who I talked to about it that I would be running for governor.
How much
my
of
intention.
What was your reaction when you got when so much of the Republican leadership reacted adversely?
Well, I don't know. It was.
Did it come as a surprise?
It did come as a surprise. Yes, quite a surprise. It was a sickening sort of a thing. It was a disillusioning sort of a thing to think that this organization that I had come to, this Republican organization that I had come to, had so little hospitality or feeling for me. I felt really nobly about what I could do for Georgia government and what I could do for the Republican Party in this state. My ideas about a new kind of education, a real strong strengthening of the system of education, a great emphasis on vocational training, this stupid, ridiculous situation that we have that everybody's got to go to college, and we train all of our kids from the first grade up to go to college. It's ridiculous, you know. Just a dab of them need to go to college. We need to train them for these $12 an hour jobs of laying brick, pouring cement, driving nails, mechanical work, and electronics in these areas. I had a lot of ideas that on the economics of state government. I think I could have saved a great deal more money dollar-wise in state government by executive order than Jimmy Carter has done by his total reorganization of state government, where he's created drastic problems for himself. He hadn't created any real economies. He just changed the names and the name tags over there. That's about all. I knew the government. I'd grown up in it, been around the legislature. I'd worked with Talmadge, who's just an absolute political genius. And so I had better training than anybody who'd come down the pike in a long time to be governor. And I had this very noble feeling about it, you know, that, yeah, I can do a good job. I was rather disgusted with some of the decisions that had come from guys around the Capitol and some of the Democratic leadership in the various pockets across the state, not necessarily as Democrats, but I just thought here's an opportunity to pick up a torch and change the history of this state. And had I gotten that nomination, it would have been, I'd tonight be about the hottest, one of the hottest things in America. Because it would have, we would have done a good job. It would have changed the face of politics down here. There were several congressmen who had indicated they were going to join the Republican Party, but they waited for us to join to see how the water felt, you know, before they made the decision. I think we could have changed the number of county commissioners and legislators. So it was rather disillusioning and just a shattering sort of an experience to see that the Republican leadership just had no feel for this external type Republican politics.
Did you anticipate a number of legislators would switch?
Oh, I don't think there's any question but what they would have.
Did you expect any to switch after the five of you switched before
yes,
you ran for governor?
They would have had we been received more enthusiastically by the Republicans, and certainly there would have been switching after the general election had we been elected. See, when the Republicans wound up nominating this young fellow, the TV announcer, I think they became a joke to a great extent. Lester Maddox had seriously contemplated joining the Republican Party during that 68 to 70 interim. Many people across the state had seriously contemplated it. They took us seriously. Senator Russell said to me, Senator Richard Russell, who was living at that time, said, I wouldn't have done it had I been in your place, but I can understand why you did it. He could see the potential for building and, you know, for shifting. It was a dramatic sort of a thing had it worked out. There was any number of members of the legislature. Now, there were four members of the United States Congress who took us very seriously and were contemplating the possibility of a change. The White House was giving real serious consideration to making certain overtures to Southern congressmen after the 1970 general election campaign if they could have come within a half dozen congressmen, representatives of controlling the United States House of Representatives. They were seriously contemplating overtures and incentives to congressmen that would have given the Republicans control of the House of Representatives. Several of our United States senators were approached from the South, and various sections were approached with the idea of joining the Republican Party. This thing had substance there for about 24 months, but when Republicans in this state just slashed it to the ground, all of my old friends out in the state, in courthouses and city halls, who had taken it seriously, you know, that maybe the kid knows what he's talking about, they were waiting to see. And I never did even get to first base, and television announcer was given the job. It became somewhat of a joke in the eyes of a lot of people. They quit taking Republicans seriously, certainly, after 70, until Fletcher Thompson's campaign in 72. And then they caught old Fletcher padding his postage stamp account and made a big issue of, you know, a fellow stealing stamps. And average Georgian can't understand that. He can't conceive of a man stealing a pot full of gold, but he can conceive of a fellow swiping a postage stamp. Real petty, icky kind of politics such as that. Fletcher's campaign just didn't come off as a very real sort of a campaign. And I think it's pretty well shattered the Republicans in this state for some years to come.
Someone said that Thompson's campaign, someone told us they felt that Thompson's campaign was based on running against Gambrell. And when Gambrell didn't get the nomination, that the people who managed Thompson's campaign weren't flexible enough to change. And they ran a campaign that was aimed for Gambrell, but they weren't running against Gambrell. Is that, did you see it that way?
There is a lot of substance to it. I don't recall seeing it that way. I didn't pay really a great deal of attention to that campaign. Fletcher was an exceedingly rigid sort of a person. He strongly resented my joining the Republican Party. there was a great opportunity for him to have real allies in the state capitol, he endorsed Hal Suit, my opponent, and was quite antagonistic towards me because I think it was a matter of envy. He hated to see, maybe not conscious envy, but a subconscious sort of a thing. Politicians very frequently are petty thinkers and short-sighted thinkers. And I think Fletcher was short-sighted in his thinking. I think he was exceedingly rigid and inflexible and unimaginative. He didn't know what the hell to do.
Where was Mike Egan in this?
Right across the railroad over here in Brookwood Hills, playing softball with his kids and pretty well relaxing, getting reelected himself. He wasn't particularly excited over Fletcher's campaign.
No, I meant in the governor's race.
He supported me.
Rather
vigorously.
How do you rate him as minority leader in the House?
Oh, I rate Mike Egan as a very intelligent and very competent young person, a person with, I use the word noble again, a person with noble ambitions. I doubt if he'll ever get very far on a statewide basis in this state because he is from Atlanta and he is somewhat of a blue blood aristocratic type. He projects the image of an aristocrat. He doesn't come through quite as well as one would need to get the votes south of Atlanta. But I rate him 4.0 in virtually every respect. Integrity, intelligence, energy, ambition.
Philosophically and ideologically, isn't he pretty much to the left of most of the Republicans in the state? And he's a Rockefeller man in 68.
Yes, I would say that he's to the left of the majority of the Republicans. I'd say his philosophy and mine, he might be slightly to the left of me, but not a great deal. I think he's a pragmatist, he's a realist.
How does he get, why do the Republicans in the legislature, most of whom are more conservative than he is, elect him as minority leader? Simply
because
respect for ability?
He's intelligent and he's a leader. He has the stuff to make decisions. He's a excellent political strategist. And it's a damn shame we don't have more like him in the Republican Party. He can see the vision of the Republicans someday dominating the South, and he knows that his own thinking is somewhat to the left of the masses of the Republicans here, but he doesn't speak out on the more moderate, more liberal sentiments that he has. He expresses his feelings, those feelings that he has that are in common with the masses. He's more inclined to emphasize and expresses himself on those issues. There's a lot to be said for a fellow, knowing what to say and when to say it and how to say it.
What has been the effect of reapportionment in Georgia politically?
Well, I think it's by and large been helpful. Certainly it's been helpful to the city of Atlanta. There was a time all of us in our little antics and mimicking sessions in politics remember the stories of Gene Talmadge saying that he didn't want to carry a county that had streetcars. In the old days, the post-depression days, he made that kind of remarks. And if you ever see the Atlanta newspapers bragging on me, you'll know I sold you out, boys. That kind of jazz. Atlanta's now come to be respected and accepted and gradually taking a position of real leadership in the state because the voters here have the power and the strength to command and demand this kind of respect and receive this kind of respect. I think reapportionment has, by the same token, created some real problems. I'm not sure that we've improved the caliber of leadership in the state legislature. In the old days, you had 3 members of the state legislature, the House of Representatives, and 1 member of the state Senate from Atlanta. And they could ride to breakfast with the mayor in the morning and make decisions on the direction for legislative matters for the city. And it wasn't really a bad deal. It was a tight control of the legislative representation. Now there must be 36 senators and legislators combined from the Atlanta community here, and they seldom ever together on anything. There's a rather substantial amount of bickering. There's some exceedingly mediocre legislators, mediocre members of the Atlanta delegation in the legislature. And I think this mediocrity in the legislature has come primarily from the metropolitan area here.
The rural forces in the legislature still predominate, though, isn't that basically so?
I suppose that they dominate. I haven't been closely observant in the last 4 years, but certainly the rural forces are a tremendous factor. If they don't dominate, they're a very decisive balance of power there.
How much longer do you think they will dominate?
Oh, probably another 10 years. It's a gradual sort of a thing. I think that it's not so much as a question of rural forces dominating the legislature, just sheer numbers. I think the philosophy.